The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
It is one of these old Christian church words. It's the one for this season that started last Sunday and will end at Christmas. Hear the word, and maybe you thought of some of the things that Carmen mentioned in her reflection, the wreaths laid flat, the candles in them, each one lit and additionally each week. Maybe you think of the hymns like those she mentioned, one of the ones like the one we'll close with this week, or others that speak of expectation of this child who will be born. Advent is this season that's best understood through the eyes and experience of Mary in the story. She is the one who is most alive with the experience of waiting in the way we're meant to first think of it, whose body is doing the literal work of preparation. We enter into this sacred season, in this sacred story of Christianity, where she is literally preparing for the birth we sing about. Do we know seasons of Advent in our own lives, besides ones like this? I think we do. It's a lot less dramatic in San Francisco than, say, Boston or New York or North Dakota right now, but winter is a long season of preparation. And it cannot be an accident that Advent and Christmas get scheduled right around this time of the year. I mean, we don't know when the Christ child was born or died, but if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, this is a really good time for this part of the story. Did any of you ever learn in your studies or reading about this literary or theatrical device called the pathetic fallacy? Can bring it up at parties now. It's where the author or a director has nature or some object in the world mirror the emotions of the main character, usually, particularly their mood or experience. It's when, I'm sure you've seen these scenes, and now you'll just think every time you see them, ah, pathetic fallacy, when the main character has their heart broken. And in that moment, the skies open and it starts to rain. Or in the Shakespeare play King Lear, when the king, disgraced and betrayed by his daughters, goes out to wander, going mad from all that he has lost and suffered, and outside a storm is raging that mirrors his inward storm. Advent is a quieter version of the pathetic fallacy that's written into the drama, the religious drama of Christianity. The world, it's timed so the world conspires with the story because it's winter. The longest, coldest nights, the sun fighting, it seems, these days. It's so weak, fighting to break from the horizon. And I think, cannot help but feel the desire to crawl into a cave, to hibernate. And there is a sense of stillness all around us that settles, and maybe heaviness. We have our blue holiday service on the 18th of this month to speak to some of the heaviness. And it won't be spring until we see some of the fruition of our waiting during this time when natural life is in retreat, but in the dark of winter, by December 25th, though it begins on the cusp of the 21st and solstice, we can start to see, if we're paying attention, the slightest evidence that we are turning back toward the light. All of this makes it a time when we can feel deep with stillness and wondering the unknown, the mysterious unfolding of what will be And Advent is about the times when we don't know what will come. Like during these darkest nights, not for sure, not until it happens. Sometimes maybe we wonder whether it will come, the thing we want or are yearning for. Maybe we feel something stirring, something just around the corner, like Arundhati Roy's famous quote, "Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing." Or maybe we're in a moment where it feels more certain, more hopeful, that something is coming our way, beginning to take life, like the song in West Side Story that Tony sings. Could be, who knows? There's something due any day. I will know right away, soon as it shows. It may come cannonballing down through the sky, gleaming its eye bright as a rose. Who knows? It's only just out of reach. Down the block, on a beach, under a tree. I've got a feeling there's a miracle due, gonna come true, coming to me. Who knows? Could be. The air humming, 'cause something great is coming. Maybe tonight. Advent is these times. So Advent is also about how we make room, as Tony is, for what we feel is coming. We make room to listen for the world, the possibilities, as Roy says, that we can hear breathing and on her way. To figure out what it might be. Is it a relationship? Is it some personal growth we're being invited into? Is it the call to wrestle some new way of being into the world, a career change or a move or the resolve to step in to one of the world's ugly, hurting, broken places and lay our gifts on the altar? So many ways new life that's breathing and moving toward us can take shape. And Advent is about listening. It's about quieting. It's about preparing. And Advent, it's also about inviting growth, not being entirely passive, and the miraculous, inviting it to come and settle with us too. I don't necessarily think that we are all born with one destiny, with one path, or even with one soulmate. I do hope that there are many opportunities each of us has to be of service in the world, to find love, to make joy, to participate in the best of one another's lives and the world's constant rebirth and its process of becoming. And I do also think we maybe need to make ourselves available for all of this. Or I have a suspicion that it helps for us to let the universe know that we're available for all of this, to be of service. I was reading again recently a couple of different books on creativity. Reminded of how it shows up in conversations artists and writers will often have about creativity. Talking of creativity, Elizabeth Gilbert, in her book Big Magic, says that she has this sense, as many creatives do, that there is a muse that is part of her life and her process. And that ideas get dropped down into her creative consciousness that she can either step into or ignore. But over time, she believes, they will find a place to be born if she is willing and can leap in and can cooperate with them into birthing something in the world that wants and needs to be born. Stephen King also has a beautiful short book on writing where he talks of the idea of a muse. His, as I recall, is a grumpy old man with a fedora smoking a cigar who stands in the corner. And he waits for Stephen, who comes in his practice every morning at the same time to the same desk, to show that this writer means business. So sitting at his desk, King says, sometimes he waits for 10 minutes, sometimes he waits for hours for the muse to begrudgingly walk over and stand behind him and participate in a shared process. But King has to show he means business. The theme of both of these is this idea of how we make ourselves available to the universe for its unfolding and what waits to be born. It reminds me of a quote from the Talmud that says, every blade of grass has its angel that bends over it and whispers, grow, grow. So maybe we all have muses in life too, and angels whispering, grow. Or maybe God, or maybe spirit is a bit like music that's playing all around us, like it sometimes plays in the background of a meal we have in a restaurant with a friend. But the kind of music that if you're having a conversation or if you're busily distracted, you're not consciously recognizing what it is it's singing into your ear. And in that way, spiritual practices and ritual are not hocus pocus or balderdash created by simple people for simple minds. They are simple, for sure, sometimes. They are simply structures we, you and I, put in place, things we do to scaffold our days, the seasons of our life, our years, that we might make our hearts open and that we might find a way to quiet, to force ourselves to remember, and ways to quiet the noise, to listen for that whisper to grow. And often what meets us when we practice ways of listening and readiness isn't far away rumbles of some God-sized feet, but it's the part of ourselves, like the reading today, that's made mute by our own frenetic pace and distracted self and so much else that works against listening and opening. And Advent, then, is this beautiful ritual season with a story of something quite literal that wants to come into the world and be born, a child, the blessing of each child, but of course, something more spiritual that waits to be born, also hope, challenging truths, invitations that will be spoken and enacted in a life that invite us and show us how we might be better, what we might ask ourselves to do in our relationship to one another and the world and the powers that be, that this child will bring into the world with him, that all children potentially do. Into this season of cold and darkness, quiet and more stillness, perfect timing, we enter the posture of Advent. From that Latin word adventus, meaning coming. And how can we know then what it is that comes or wishes to come into our worlds that we might participate in its birthing into this world? We listen and we prepare, right? And what does that practically mean? First, we can try intentionally stripping some of the busyness and distraction out of our lives, more than even winter does naturally for us. I think that can feel unnerving if we are used to being perpetual motion machines. So maybe part of what we listen for as we strip things down and make them quieter and simpler is what fears and anxieties come up for us when we stop frenetic living. And then we continue to do all of those things that allow us to listen and pay attention. I bet each of you know when and where self-knowledge and epiphanies most often find you. Go there. Do that. Second, just like an expectant family not only waits, but they prepare, we prepare ourselves in these seasons. We imagine what it might mean, what we might need to be ready. Families like Sierra's acquired some practical items, got some lessons about how to change a diaper or burp a baby, got wisdom, garnered it from those who had been on this journey before, rallied loved ones to be around and extra support and in a circle that also was part of the preparation, come who and what may to be ready with them, and we do likewise. If it's a new relationship you and I are preparing for, maybe there's some old baggage we need to unpack. Maybe we book some time with a therapist. Maybe we know we aren't good at conflict, so we study up a little and learn a few tips. Maybe we try to pay off our debt and be more fiscally responsible, double down on sobriety, all the things that make us, prepare us to be a better life partner or friend. If it's a job transition, we book time with a career coach. Ask people how doing what they do feeds them and where they resent the hell out of it, what an average day looks like. Strip away the wishful thinking and find out whether their description is something that we think we would find joy and fulfillment in. The point is to ask, what can I do to prepare for what I think or hope might be coming? Do I downsize so I can take to the roads, get a full medical checkup before I go to the fertility specialist, maybe spread the ashes and lay the memorial stone because sometimes you have to honor endings to invite in new beginnings? Whatever it is, Advent is this time of clearing space and setting intentions to listen and to prepare. And it is the invitation to do both. As we talked about earlier, we have to agree and admit that waiting can be hard. It almost always involves a lot of uncertainty, and most of us don't like uncertainty. It's actually one of the biggest human emotional stressors. And waiting in the ways I'm describing does involve, I think, some really active but trusting surrender to the world and to our deepest selves while things unfold. And in that interim, it can feel like we're giving up a lot of control and we're trading it in for a posture that can feel instead really vulnerable and scary, which I think it is, vulnerable. But in all of this, let's put around all of it the container that nothing of value is ever really born like Venus in that Botticelli painting, full-blown, born on a half-shell from the ocean. You and I, each of us, we came after billions of years of stardust and matter and light exploded and simple cells developed into more complex life, and we began with two cells meeting. And 10 months of these beings taking shape into us, and all the years since, A book is written a word at a time. A career starts with a person who really should have imposter syndrome. Life partnership often starts with attraction and is made real only over time, long, long after the officiant has signed the official paperwork. Moreover, a good surfer knows that even after a lifetime of practice, some days you still have to wait a long time in the ocean to catch the wave that brought you out there. It's not like the waiting and preparation in some ways for any of us ever fully ends. A good life. To live one, we will practice our way, pray our way, breathe and sing, and stumble and dance our way through 1,000 Advent seasons. In all the ways they show up for us, or we invite them in. So each year, one religious tradition hands us an opportunity and a reminder to do so. Because life, my friends, life is always waiting to be born. The muse waiting to hand us our creative part of the world's unfolding, and the angels bidding seeds wherever they land to grow. In that spirit, may the blessings of this season, again and again and again, be ours. Amen.
In my family home, when I was growing up, an Advent wreath was in the center of our dinner table, and the four-week ritual was the focus of our attention. It was most often made of branches from a pine tree woven into a circle. The wreath had four candles. Three were purple and one was pink. Every Sunday we would light a new candle. The first and second week of Advent, we lit the purple candles. And on the third Sunday of Advent, we lit the pink one, which was to symbolize that Christmas was near and that Jesus would soon be born again. And of course, that Santa Claus was just around the corner. And on the fourth Sunday, when the last purple candle was lit, we knew the wait for Christmas was soon over. We had a book of prayers to accompany the lighting of the candle. And when we all got to the dinner table, one of us six kids, or my mom or dad, would read the prayer for the day, and one of us would light the candle. I loved Advent time. Despite the growing commercialization of Christmas, there was something steady and strong in the daily rituals of preparation and anticipation. The songs were quieter and mantra-like. O come Emmanuel. Or patience, people, the Lord is coming. The readings were hopeful and descriptive of the life and light that would be born, not only in the Christ child, but in all of us. Prepare thee the way for the wonderful counselor, the Prince of Peace. Awake from your slumber, arise from your sleep, for a new day is dawning for all those who weep, is one of the songs we would sing. I know for some, it can sound a bit warm, fuzzy, or like a Hallmark movie, but there was something, and there is something, in holding on to the hope of light and peace and wisdom coming into our lives and into this world. Sending out cards to family and friends with wishes for a blessed holiday and a happy new year, or buying something special for someone, or picking out a gift for children or adults who had very little. Consciously giving money to organizations and individuals who were doing work we valued. In our own little ways, we were helping that hope, that light, that care become a reality, if only for a moment. It has been many years since I have had an Advent wreath. As I have moved around the world and lived with people with varying belief systems, as the story of the birth of Jesus that felt so real and literal in the early period of my life began to get more complicated, as I learned of and come to value the root celebration of solstice and other cultural rituals of this time of year, and as this Prince of Peace and wonderful counselor has been used to judge and destroy so many people over so many centuries and in our current times, it has been hard to return to the innocence and practice of this ritual. And yet I long for it. Each year when the season comes round, I think about making an Advent wreath, and I don't. Though there are other rituals like the celebration of solstice or the celebration of light that we faithful fools do every December, nothing has quite rooted me in the same way as that ritual that held steady and in common with my family and my church. The daily prayers and the lighting of candles helped me believe in and hold on to that innocent hope of things being lighter and brighter. With or without an Advent wreath, the part I don't want to give up on is the call to quiet reflection in this season and the unwavering belief that light will break into the darkness, that swords will be beaten into plowshares, that the lion will lie down with the lamb, and that peace will be known on earth.